I know you're out there. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
Connecting the dots of the Constitution for you like no one else can. The Chris Ann Hall Show. American woman, listen what I say. She's an attorney, a disabled U.S. Army veteran, an author, public speaker, mother, pastor's wife, and a patriot. She's Chris Ann Hall.
Rise and shine, liberty-loving patriots. Welcome to the Chris Ann Hall Daily Journal. Chris Ann Hall here, KrisAnnHall.com. Liberty over security, principle over party, and truth over your favorite personality. Daily Journal, day two of the Kavanaugh confirmation hearings. What an exciting part of history that we have happening right in front of our eyes, especially given the understanding by the most majority of the American people that once you are a Supreme Court judge, you die there. I'm like, not tomorrow, but in what, 40 years or something. And so we endeavor, my husband and I, my husband J.C. Hall and I, we endeavor to bring to you this hearing, not from a political perspective, not from a fake news perspective, but from a constitutional and principled perspective, which unfortunately, J.C., or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, kind of puts me at odds with certain groups.
I was just going to say, which means you're going to agree with some and disagree with some, another part. Because if you're principled, if you're talking about it from a principled perspective, and as most of Americans, you know, are sort of oriented toward political party perspective, then it's not going to run right down the line of party platform, you know, standard talking points kind of thing. So, yeah. No doubt.
Yeah, so I was on Law and Crime Network today, and we did 2 hours with Law and Crime this morning. We are still here in the Big Apple, New York City, looking out of our hotel room on Times Square. And tonight I will be on Newsmax, and that's going to be exciting. So you need to go to the website. You need to go to chrisannhall.com. You can go to Facebook or Twitter and follow up on that, find out when we're going to be on Newsmax and how that's going to work. And what we did today, in addition to the legal case that Law and Crime has been following, we covered the Kavanaugh confirmation. So
pretty exciting.
I watched the first hour and a half live.
More raucous protest
More
at
raucous.
The beginning.
Are you kidding me? Raucous. That is just ridiculous.
I actually like the drama on one level because it gets people's attention. They're paying attention. You have
That's
a chance
true.
For Americans to learn about the process, to become aware of the process.
Right, and I think that's a great teaching moment. So the more publicity they bring to it, perhaps it's actually a good thing. And Thomas Paine said crises were good things, so
but
drama
I think,
is good things.
Yeah, but it was embarrassing, I think, for the Democrats, it seems to me.
Yeah. So listening to the first hour and a half, we got to hear the opening statement. We got to hear the ruckusness in the beginning once again, and the just lack of any kind of, you know, protesters. Okay, so I'm all for freedom of speech. I'm all for protesting. And I'm not opposed to protesting here. The problem is we should be able to protest like that. If we can protest like that here, we should be able to protest out like that on the Senate floor.
Well, anywhere.
On the House floor.
Well, it's
anywhere.
You know, if you think about it, you know, you have these guys, they're protesting, and then the people flipping out about. Although I didn't see really anybody move to sort of stop it per se,
well,
although
there was
several
shouting.
People, quite a few people were arrested.
Well, they were shouting. Yeah. They were shouting over. You were kind of watching us sometimes, so you couldn't hear what was going on. But they were shouting over Kavanaugh as he was trying to speak. It was you couldn't tell what they were saying, but inaudible. But you could actually hear it.
But it's interesting how do you handle that from a legal perspective, right? You have First Amendment right to protest. So what is sort of the charge? Disturbing the peace? I mean.
Interfering with the orderly conduct of government.
No, I'm talking about legitimate. How do you legitimately handle it from a prosecutorial perspective? What are they charging these people with?
Well, you know, there is an aspect of being non-peaceful, so you can't allow the heckler's veto in this kind of thing. So there's also an aspect where the American people have a right to hear what is going on. And so that's that. When you're balancing liberty, as the government officials and the politicians like to repeat all the time, we need to balance. Barack Obama was good at that. We need to balance your security and your privacy. Yeah. No, that's not what we balance. Mm-hmm. When you're talking about the balance of liberty, you have to balance the rights of one person over another. Right.
Yeah,
so at what point you harm another?
Yeah. It's an interesting conundrum as I watched it. So just curious. You know what else stood out for me? It's nothing necessarily to do with the content, but you have one of the big things is this guy, it's a Bush appointee, right? He's D.C.
Right.
Circuit judge. He worked in the Bush administration alongside, I think, Karl Rove. He was one of Karl Rove's guys or whatever in the White House.
Yeah.
So the optics is interesting to me, how that's the push and the torture thing and the Bush era, whatever. And then here you have Kavanaugh sitting in the hearing, and then right over his left shoulder on camera is Condoleezza Rice.
Right.
So you have this optics of, you know, hey, did Dick Cheney send Condoleezza Rice to take him out in case he says something he's not supposed to say? So it's a
needle behind the earlobe or something.
It's a funny look for me, you know.
Oh, my goodness. Kavanaugh's had a heart attack in his hearings.
Not that Condoleezza Rice would do something like that. Yeah, but I'm trying to put on the conspiratorial hat of the lefties, man. It's an interesting choice of optics given the criticism. Have him sort of, you know, her right in his ear over the shoulder. That's usually when you see these guys in the Senate hearing, that's usually where their lawyers and their advisors mm-hmm. sit. You know, when they want to turn and they tell them how they should answer something or whatever. Let me confer. In this case, it's Condoleezza Rice from the Bush administration.
Well,
you know, during the time of the torture thing that's in question with him.
Right. Well, let me offer up an alternative suggestion. They spent a lot of time this morning. Orrin Hatch just made me want to stick my finger down my throat and throw up because his
that's
whole...
That's pretty much any time I hear Orrin Hatch, personally.
His whole thing was about, you know, establishing what an amazing man of women's rights Kavanaugh is.
Really?
And so that was the whole thing. It was so, so gratuitous. It was just ridiculous. So let me offer you that, since that seems to be one of the pointed
narratives. So they're associating this, you know, first woman, whatever, mm-hmm. Condoleezza Rice,
yes.
Prominent, this and that. He has her backing, so how could you go again,
right.
You know, pitch this idea of this misogyny, blah, blah, blah.
Right,
so,
not only that, because he's going to be attacked because of the Roe v. Wade issue, and so he's got to, they got to overcome
some prominent women.
That, but with the prominence. And when you look at this, when you look at these things, it's not just Condoleezza Rice. Do you see any men?
No, there are no men behind him.
No men behind him in your visual view.
So that, and maybe as a woman you saw that, I didn't see that. I see knives and spies and, you know. Spy versus spy.
I saw women. I saw women, yeah.
Which is for you. Like, if the optics are for that, then that's directed at you as
a
woman.
Absolutely. And I think also because, you know, I'm looking at this for the second time. I don't know if I consciously noticed it the first time, but the second time after that, you know, that really sappy display by Orrin Hatch, it was forefront on my mind. So my thought was Condoleezza Rice. Why Condoleezza Rice.
That makes sense.
So
thank you.
That's why that's there.
My mind always goes to, you know, the maniacal Dick Cheney behind the scenes. And, you know, what is he doing?
Right.
Who's he sending out there?
So here's, I have to make this statement. And I think that, you know, it's really going to it might bother some people because it's you have to know, let me give this disclaimer from the get-go. I am not a 100% Kavanaugh fan.
No, definitely not.
I draw a distinction with many things that Kavanaugh has done as a judge, not as a person, but as a judge. But I find a lot of problems that I have with his judicial stance, his judicial opinions. And one of the first things that struck me in the first, like, 4 minutes of, 4 or 5 minutes of his opening statement, Kavanaugh's opening statement, was he actually declared that Justice Kennedy was the pinnacle of liberty. I mean, I know that might blow over the head of the average American who doesn't even know who the Supreme Court justices are or what they do or what stands that they take. But I know you guys listening out there, you guys are not the average American. So right now, as you heard me say that, whether you may not have caught that, you may have had a chance to listen to the confirmation hearing yet or his opening statement. But he went on, and I'm not kidding, he went on for several minutes about how he admired Kennedy, how Kennedy was, he said, if I had to describe the office of justice, or justice of Kennedy in one word, I would choose the word, pause, liberty.
Oh, brother.
And
so this is what I hate.
I was like, really? Come on now. You know, Scalia.
But that's
right?
The thing about these hearings.
And Scalia wasn't even 100% liberty.
No,
so.
But that's how, isn't that how they go? This is what I hate about the hearings is, and I don't understand why you can't sit there and just say what you believe, right? Give your principles. Everything is crafted as a counter statement or a counter argument, you know, in anticipation of what the opposition is going to say or what they want to hear. So there's no way. I mean, I don't honestly think I understand he was Kennedy's one of his
clerks.
Clerks,
he
clerked right?
For Kennedy,
I get that. But there's no way in my mind that he honestly believes and that Kennedy is the standard in his mind, right? He crafted this for the hearing to say that because he's replacing Kennedy, Kennedy's the vacancy, blah, blah, blah. So that's what I hate. It's a little dishonest and contrived where that they shape the messaging, you know, to sort of anticipate the objections and all this stuff. So,
well, here's in the situation. I want to hope that you're right. I seriously want to hope that you're right because I would hate to believe.
We saw the same stuff with Gorsuch.
Yeah, I know, but I would hate to believe that Kavanaugh actually believes that Kennedy is the pinnacle of liberty in the Supreme Court as he knows it. Welcome back to the Chris Ann Hall Daily Journal. Chris Ann Hall here, KrisAnneHall.com, here with my husband and co-host JC Hall. We are covering day two of the Kavanaugh confirmation hearings. And, you know, we've said this before on the air. I believe, and I think when Gorsuch had his confirmation hearing, these are all throwaways. And I think...
Yeah, a lot of it is.
This is because... We no longer see a confirmation process, right? Because for decades, we have operated as if this is just simply a rubber stamp of who the president wants on the Supreme Court.
I think
and
that's
so,
one part of it. The other part was what Sassy was describing, that because the Congress has stopped doing its job, that these other things have become the political arena. And so this is political theater and... You more focused on like what you said of just going through the motions.
Well, you have no purpose.
You know how it's going to turn out.
Yeah, you have no purpose in this hearing.
No.
Right? You're not actually trying to discern
not the right purpose
whether he is fit to be justice or not.
Right.
You're not discerning that because it's become a political issue and not a check and balance constitutional forum.
It reminds me of this. Maybe this sounds like a stretch, but it makes me think of the war in Syria, right? The war in Syria is not about Syria. It's a proxy war between the United States, Russia, Iran. Like, it's a war between other entities, okay? So the same thing. It stops being about Kavanaugh and his qualifications, his judgment, his, you know, resume, his background.
His character.
It's actually, he serves as a proxy for the war between the two parties. And it's
absolutely
really the parties taking the stage to transmit political messages, you know, simply as Kavanaugh and the hearings as a pretense. So it's really them fighting with one another, you know, giving speeches. Because if you listen, it's funny when you listen to kind of the opening statements, I noticed the senators kind of transmitting or signaling what they want to hear from Kavanaugh. So it's like saying, hint, hint, here's what I want you to say.
Mm-hmm.
And then they take the other half to sort of attack the positions of the Democrats and Republicans back and forth. So it's just sort of a proxy war under the guise of a hearing.
So if we were actually running a constitutional confirmation hearing, there wouldn't honestly be time for all of this political nonsense.
All the theatrics.
And we would be actually getting to questions instead of statements. Because watch this hearing. It's going to be nothing but 5-minute statements that are posed in the as a question because the senator talked for 5 minutes and then raised the octave of his voice at the end of the statement to indicate, okay, that was a question. And so,
like, blah, 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 blah. Do you agree with that? Did you do that? What do you have to say about that?
Yeah, exactly. And so the thing that I have a real issue with here is that we're not asking the questions that need to be asked. It's all about politics. And if we were actually engaging in a constitutional confirmation hearing, there wouldn't have been all of this ruckus in the beginning about not having all the documents.
Yeah.
Because here's how it would go. Okay, we don't have all the documents yet, but we're going to start the process because we have a lot of questions to ask. And as we ask the questions, we are expecting to have more information. Mm-hmm. Because this is a process. Nobody's expecting these questions, that this thing is going to be ended in 24 hours or 48 hours. As a matter of fact, I think that our expectations of how long this should take are misconceived anyway. I don't see why a confirmation process can't take several months if it has to. I mean, if there is contention, if there is disagreement, there's no reason why it has to be done in 72 hours.
Yeah.
But because, once again, I'll go back to this, because it has become this rubber stamp thing,
right,
we have this allotted time in which we engage in our political rhetoric until we rubber stamp who the president chooses.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm kind of right in the middle. I feel like 2 weeks, like, if you should be able to find out all you need to know in 2 weeks, barring this sort of thing of we don't have access to information. Now, here's the thing about what they're saying they don't have. They already have an idea of what the contents are, what the subject matter is, so they can ask them about the ideas and principles behind that subject mm-hmm. matter. So that's the thing. They don't get to the depth of constitutional issues. Let's talk about the Fourth Amendment. Let's talk about the First Amendment. You know, due process. They don't do that.
As arrogant men tear up our Constitution, and from every direction we cry revolution, standing together and without soldiers for truth in the war of attrition, the love of our country as our ammunition.
The Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Long way from my home, and I'm going to change.
Welcome back to the Chris Ann Hall Daily Journal. We're covering day two of the Kavanaugh confirmation hearing, and I want to play for you a segment of I almost said Gorsuch, Kavanaugh's opening statement about how he feels the role of the judiciary and its independence.
Independent and must interpret the law, not make the law. A judge must interpret statutes as written. A judge must interpret the Constitution as written, informed by history and tradition and precedent. In deciding cases, a judge must always keep in mind what Alexander Hamilton said in Federalist 83. The rules of legal interpretation are rules of common sense. A good judge must be an umpire, a neutral and impartial arbiter who favors no litigant or policy.
You know, I find it interesting that he gives an order, okay?
Uh-huh.
An order of event. A judge is to apply the Constitution. He's to apply the law. He is applied to apply precedent.
Yeah, but I don't think he finished that phrase.
Right. Which it right, but what I'm saying is,
but I get it. Yeah, that's the order of
the order of acknowledging, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So backwards, precedent and law must comply with the Constitution.
Uh huh.
And so one of the things that I disagree with Kavanaugh, which would probably put me in disagreement with a majority of justices in the country today.
Yeah.
Is the reliance on precedent as if it is the standard.
I think that order that he gave is approached in reverse.
Absolutely. I was going to say that. Yeah, it's precedent, then the law, then the Constitution.
Maybe the Constitution.
Maybe the Constitution. But you see, later on in this morning in his presentation, he's going to make a statement that really made me cringe. And I couldn't find the clip for it, but I remember it because it made me cringe. And he said, as a U.S. District Court judge, I had no choice but to follow the Supreme Court's opinions.
Yeah, so that's why I was thinking, wouldn't you love to hear follow-up about this, about precedent, right? When
mm-hmm.
he says precedent, wouldn't you love to hear then the senator come back and say, what do you mean by precedent? Can you define that for us?
Well, I would have a more direct question. I would say, Justice Kavanaugh, Korematsu is still standing law.
Yeah,
Korematsu
I would
has
say
never
that as
been
the follow-up.
Yeah, Korematsu has never been
yeah.
overturned. It is standing precedent
yeah.
as you define it.
Yeah, or that could be a preface, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then you say that and then say, so then how do you define precedent? What do you mean by following precedent?
Right, because would you, Justice Kavanaugh, follow Korematsu?
Yeah.
And for those of you who are listening who don't know Korematsu, Korematsu v. U.S. was the case that challenged the executive order that put Japanese Americans, now these were not immigrants, these were not illegal immigrants, these were not green card holders, these were actual citizens of the United States, put Japanese American citizens in internment camps, men, women, and children.
Yeah, because of their Japanese heritage.
Just because of their Japanese heritage during the war.
Yeah.
And so the Supreme Court says, stunningly, not just simply we agree with this, we believe the Constitution supports this. And that's why I have a problem with something that Kavanaugh said. He said, we are to apply the Constitution as we see it. What happens when the court sees that Dred Scott is property and not a man?
Yeah.
What happens when the court sees that Japanese children and women and men are not afforded the natural right of due process? What happens when they see that? See, the standard is the Constitution and it is not precedent.
That's why I have a huge problem when they say this. Nobody bats an eye.
Right.
It's just nodded. It's just assented to and accepted when they say precedent and they throw this term around and nobody says a word. Like, like you're saying, let's name some precedents.
Right.
Dred Scott, precedent. Korematsu, precedent. Brown, precedent. So, you know, What do you mean you're going to follow precedent? Will there be an instance where you don't follow precedent? And how do you determine that? See, that's a more important question to me, because everybody in this entire chamber is signaling their ignorance, number one, mm-hmm. and their lack of fitness to represent the people of the United States, because they don't understand nor acknowledge an issue as straightforward as this. They don't question it. I find that unacceptable. And like I said, that tells to me there's not a single person sitting in that chamber that's fit to represent me.
Not only that, you have Kavanaugh quoting Hamilton in Federalist 83. So I have to believe that he actually has read these things. So if he's read 83, I'm sure he's read 78. And in 78 and 83, I'm just giving him the benefit of doubt. He's not just pulling some quote out of WikiQuote, right? No. He's actually read these documents. And I think maybe Kavanaugh might have read the Federalist Papers. But if he's read these, then he has to know that they actually, Hamilton describes precedent not as will, not the name will, but not as a person's individual will, not as the terms
will of the court
or the will of society,
right,
but as the Constitution's standard of explanation. So precedent is only precedent when it aptly explains the Constitution. And what the problem that I have is, yes, Kavanaugh is going to quote Alexander Hamilton here, but does he listen to Alexander Hamilton? Because our founders, the drafters of our Constitution, went to a great deal of effort to tell us exactly what the Constitution means. And this is where I have this biggest problem with Kavanaugh, is his expansion of government power through the denial of Fourth Amendment. His opinions in past cases, and there's a handful of them, he's very strongly into expanding government power over privacy and property through the redefinition of reasonableness.
Yeah.
You know, those of you who've been listening to the show for a long time, those of you who are students at libertyfirstuniversity.com, you know that the Fourth Amendment is very clear. We do not need courts and judges and politicians to redefine what reasonable is. Mm-hmm. The Fourth Amendment defines what reasonable is.
Well, this is why you were arguing that for the Democrats to try to stop the hearings. This is the whole point of the process, to
right.
have these discussions.
We should be asking him
to
these
know
questions.
These things.
You know, later on, the question comes up for Kavanaugh. What do you think about the president being brought under subpoena, being charged with a crime, yeah. or brought in a civil case?
And there's a little bit questionable position.
Yeah.
That he articulates.
Yeah.
There too.
So here's the thing.
Which is popular today, apparently.
He apparently holds the position, and we've not really heard this very definitively from his mouth, that the president is to be guarded from court cases, and criminal.
And didn't he go further to say that Congress could write a law shielding the president?
Yeah, he said because he says there's no law
says
I forget
the
said.
President can be indicted or
right,
something.
Right. So what he was saying is basically reaffirming what people believe, that he does not believe that the president can be indicted. But then he also clarifies that if they want clarity on this issue, because during the confirmation hearing, they're always like, they stick completely to the script, which is, I'm not going to answer your hypothetical question.
Sure.
And of course, I would follow the precedent and whatever the law is. But he actually makes the statement that Congress could write a law to shield the president from litigations, criminal, civil litigations.
Wouldn't that, in essence, turn the president into a king?
Not only that, it's a serious violation of separation of powers.
Yeah.
You're now got the legislative branch creating a law that puts the executive branch above the law. See, those of you who've heard me talk about this before, you know that there is absolutely nothing in the Constitution that prevents the president from being indicted for criminal activity or being questioned in a civil litigation.
Can you imagine Hillary Clinton winning the presidency, you know, in the next couple of elections?
How would the Republicans?
And then she has this power of being above the law, untouchable. I mean, she's practically like that now, but you now enshrine this. That's pretty scary.
Well, not only that, it is contrary to every intent and every word given by those who drafted, who wrote the Article 2 and drafted the second article of the Constitution, drafted the Constitution in order to keep the office of the president from becoming king.
Man, this is when my conspiracy bells go off again. I don't want to sound like a nutcase, but now I see, again, Condoleezza Rice sitting there. This is a Bush guy. We know how the Bushes are in with Clintons, and now you got a guy who says we want to exempt the office of the president from law.
Yeah, and that should be very
are we angling for
very
something
disturbing.
In the future
here? No. This is ought to be very, very disturbing to us that he would have this, and then not only to have the perspective that the president can be outside and above the law, but that Congress itself can write a law that elevates the president to being above the law, which means in his understanding of the Constitution, if that would happen, you know, keep your little conspiracy theory hat on, right? So he's saying to the Congress, if you write this law to shield your president, I am going to uphold it.
Yeah.
And there you have it, right? The whole conspiracy theory there to begin with. And that's a big problem.
I want to give you a put you on the spot with a crazy hypothetical, right? Based on some of this stuff. So maybe you can pick this up after the break in the last segment. So it's kind of alleged by some that he lied under oath about his involvement in the torture under the Bush administration, and that's why they're sealing the records. If you find out later in his tenure that he lied, if another president comes into power, these records are revealed, can this guy be impeached later? And then what kind of chaos would that put us in?
Well, I guess we'll deal with that right after the break.
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Welcome back to the final segment of the Chris Ann Hall Daily Journal. Out of the break, JC asked me this question. You know, it's alleged that Kavanaugh has lied under oath about his involvement with a previous administration and the torture documents and all that other stuff. And he said, what would happen that if Kavanaugh is seated on the bench, and some years down the road, it determined that Kavanaugh actually lied under oath.
Yeah, because you had a conversation with a former federal prosecutor.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Who I thought made an interesting point that Kavanaugh was their right-hand man to Rove. He's the smartest attorney in the White House.
Mm-hmm.
Their answer was, no, we didn't talk to him about these. We didn't consult with him about these decisions.
And it was his testimony under oath.
And then he said, no, nobody talked to me. Nobody asked me anything. And the point this federal prosecutor we were listening to that you were talking to said, who could possibly believe that you wouldn't talk to the smartest guy in the administration, the smartest lawyer, top lawyer? He says, I don't believe that. So now we don't know this. This is speculation.
Mm-hmm.
But my question is, And then you add that to these. They say that's the reason they're hiding these documents about that time, because it actually reveals that they did consult with him. So total speculation. But if that were the fact, and then let's say Clinton or somebody gets the presidency and they out these documents, now they see an opportunity. Let's unseat this guy, and we'll be right back to square one, having these hearings under a new administration. Could he be impeached later because of that?
Well, the answer to that question is it depends. The statute of limitation for perjury is 5 years.
Uh-huh.
So they would have to do it within 5 years.
But then he says the same thing in these hearings.
No, that's what I mean. It would have to be within five years from now.
Right.
Right.
So Trump would absolutely need to win re-election.
Right.
Total speculation.
Total speculation.
But
now,
I'm
here's the other
if
thing.
That was true.
Yeah.
If that were true, you know, Trump would definitely need to win the election to protect this guy for 5 years.
Yeah. So I think that the other thing that is questionable is, remember, the American people believe that justices have lifetime appointments.
Yeah. By the way, I want to be clear. I'm not accusing them of this.
It
was
just
an interesting suggestion,
yeah.
And I thought, whoa, that would be crazy. You talk about drama.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So here's the thing. I believe that the whole hearing thing is just throwaway statements to begin with, because, you see, the American people, once he becomes a Supreme Court justice, they're going to forget who he is anyway. This is going to be all done.
But the Democrats are not.
I think they will, because he is not the Robert Bork. He is going to side with them.
But think about this. What if, as they're looking at these pages and they find it, wouldn't it be a better political strategy for the Democrats not to do something now, because there's no way they could get another one of their guys through, right? But if they won the midterms or they won the next election, wouldn't it be better they sit on the information, then they spring it, then get this guy out of there, then they have total control of confirming who their guy is, so they could put somebody on the court.
Yeah,
you know what
I'm
saying? So that would be kind of a strategic thing that I could see them doing. So
yeah,
if they were in that kind of
big picture thing.
Yeah, we better hope this guy's been truthful from beginning to end.
Even so, I think this is mostly just dog and pony show, because I don't think Kavanaugh is the threat that they portray him to be. I don't think they would try to unseat him. I think they're going to be fighting for the presidency very hard in 2020, because Ginsburg is going to retire after 2020.
Yeah,
if she lives until 2020, she will retire in the next term, and there is no way they want Trump to appoint three Supreme Court justices.
And I think you hit the nail on the head right there. I mean, that to me is why, that's exactly at the heart of why they're so desperate, because if she leaves and he appoints another, I mean, you're practically talking the end of Democratic power, because what the Supreme Court has become.
Yeah, an oligarch of nine kings
Democrat
and queens.
Power for decades.
Right, right. Plus the mentality of lifetime appointment. Maybe if that happened, people would start talking again about how good behavior is the standard and not lifetime appointments.
The left sure will.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Maybe they will. But nonetheless, we will continue with the Kavanaugh hearings tomorrow on the Daily Journal. I hope you're enjoying this from a constitutional perspective. Definitely not what you're seeing anywhere else. Invite your friends, your neighbors to listen, and so we can all become educated on what a real confirmation hearing is supposed to look like. God bless you guys. We'll see you tomorrow.
Let me know.